Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a brand new episode of the Super Podcast. I am your host, Super Marcy, and of course, we are here at the Super Network at supermarcy.com. And unfortunately, we have been absent for a few weeks just due to scheduling conflicts and the like, but we are back. We've made things work. No power outages in Canada will stop this podcast from going ahead. And yes, with me as always is my trusty co-host, the one and only, the one who is terrible, Bede Tremaine. Hello, Bede.
Hello, Marcy. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. How are you, mate?
Oh, not too bad, thanks. Just been so busy with a lot of stuff as of late. Not just with work and personal life, but also I'm finally getting around to writing my official top 10 list of 2016.
I'm surprised you're doing that this year instead of like 5 years from now.
I know, but it takes me forever. But you know me, I like to sort of catch up on things I missed out, and sometimes it takes me about at least 20 years to actually see every movie from that respective year. But
yeah.
Luckily I was able to see a few, and I'm kind of working on it as it speaks, but it should be up on the website very soon.
Yeah, so is your top 10 from 1942 coming up next week as well?
Exactly.
You finally caught up on, I'm kidding, of course.
Yes, I especially have my top 10 of 1920 coming up this very soon. I mean, I've finally seen them all. It's taken me almost 100 years, but I've seen every film to at least qualify for a top 10 list.
Oh, beautiful. Brilliant. Excellent. And we have our regular guest back with us who had a nice power outage when we were meant to record yesterday, but the power's back on. He is with us, so please welcome the Canadian Bacon, Nick Buzzworth.
Yo.
How?
I cannot freaking believe, like, literally, just before we started.
Yes, yesterday. It's like, oh, there goes the power.
It was a complete freak of nature. Like, literally, there was no storm whatsoever, but the freaking lightning bolt came down and hit the transformer directly. It was like, bam! And then...
Poor Optimus Prime.
Freaking neighborhood. No, yeah. Oh, yeah, poor him.
But, we've got a busted transformer.
Oh, Jesus Christ. They've been busted for a long time. This will be my last Transformers movie. Oh, fuck, I wish you'd said that 2 movies ago. But anyway, happy to be back, and wow, it's been months and months, and oh, shit. I can't remember the last podcast.
I think the last one we did, all like the three of us together, was actually probably one of our most epic episodes, the Canon Films podcast.
Oh, Jesus, yeah, that was fun.
I think we need to do a follow-up to that one.
Need to do a commentary.
Yes.
Like something. There's something like one of the greatest. That was actually a lot of fun. We got a lot of good picks out of that one.
That was a fun show.
And we got a lot of good feedback for that one as well. Like, we got a lot of downloads for that one. That was like a pretty big episode for us.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
We were having fun. I was on, with along with Paul and a few of the guys on Joe Blow, we contribute to the Joe Blow Twitter. And I was having some fun with Joe Carnahan, big-time director. Joe Carnahan, he's a fan of the site, and we were going on back and forth about Canon Films and Lou Ferrigno and his love of, you know, throwing bears over great distances, whether it's as Hercules or the Incredible Hulk. And we were going, oh, man, don't you just love, you know, Friday night marathons of Canon Films and get to Dudikoff and... It's just an absolute riot. Oh, Carnahan's, he's a gem.
Tweet yesterday. I'm not happy with him.
He's a busy guy.
I made a suggestion for who he should cast in the Raid remake, which should be seriously considered.
Who'd you say?
Lauren Avedon, because when Bede was over yesterday, we did watch King of the Kickboxers, and Lauren Avedon is a gem of the unknown martial arts movies.
I think Joe, yeah. I think if you cast a few unknowns, I think that would probably be the way to go, I would think. because I don't know that name. What else is even in?
No Retreat, No Surrender 2. Yeah, he's Yeah, he's one of those cult martial arts actors. But if you watch any of the fight scenes he does, they're kind of almost Raid-esque in how he does them.
Right.
But
He can still go. So.
I think when I first know they were saying the Raid as a remake, it's like could it be as good as the original? But it's like I trust the joke and taking in a whole new direction. You know that it's always the difference with the people who are behind the movie.
Yeah.
You know, rather than the movie itself. But I mean, shit. And then you got Grillo.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, oh yeah,
the fucking man. And you can't go wrong with that formula.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to see if it will come out soon between all the other billions of projects that Joe Carnahan has coming up as well. It seems like every day something is announced for him that he's attached to.
Not surprised. He's a talented guy.
That's true. Awesome. That's very true.
Very true. And a nice guy.
Unfortunately, this is not the Joe Carnahan podcast.
Damn it. I want to talk Smoking Aces. Underrated masterpiece. Chris Pine deserved the Oscar.
but he is
so funny in that. You gotta admit.
Yeah, no, he is great in that movie.
Oh, good stuff.
Anyway,
so
what are we talking about today?
Bede, do you want to talk about the topic?
I was gonna say, Marcy, isn't there before we go to our topic? Isn't there an important question?
Oh, that's right.
Yes, there is actually.
I almost forgot. It's been a while.
Yes, this is one thing we can never forget. Bede.
No.
Bede, why are you a terrible Australian for this episode of the podcast?
Okay, I have a really good one for this podcast. I actually watched this the other week in preparation for another list that I'm working on, and it's so big on there. I'm a terrible Australian because I have seen Boo, a Madea Halloween.
I'm just shaking my head right now.
Why would you? I don't even know. You know, the thing is, I've actually come to respect Tyler Perry. You know, it took Gone Girl for that to happen, because I realized, you know what? Goddamn, he is a damn good legit actor. You know, and it just makes me wonder why he wastes. I don't know. I get it. There are a lot of people who enjoy the movies, but it's like it's a fucking joke at this point, isn't it? Like, yep. Every time a new movie comes, it's like those Diary of a Wimpy Kid. Like, the trailer just came out for another one. It's like, holy fuck, who's paying to see these movies? Or they just, I'm guessing Boo, like, I'm guessing these Madea movies are cheap as hell.
Oh, yeah. To make. Like, I mean, I've seen quite a few of his movies, which I could easily do an entire podcast about, but, you know, that's a whole different story. But compared to, like, I guess his non-Madea movies, yeah, his Madea ones do seem rather cheap and very rushed. And I'm not going to lie, I saw the trailer for this and I was kind of hoping that this would be like his, like, Ernest Scared Stupid in that, like, but yeah, the trailer, the movie itself was definitely not what the trailer advertised it being, for sure. Like, it advertised it for one thing, but yeah, the actual movie is just not that at all, and it just ends up being irritating and annoying and boring. So
then we'll just forget that you saw it.
Yes, exactly.
Yep, just erase it from your mind.
So basically, the movie lives up the title of Boo.
That you, I would imagine to see it, you gave Tyler Perry money, so you know, I'm just gonna.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Wipe that memory from my...
All right, let's move right along, shall we?
Yeah.
Our topic for discussion for this episode of the podcast is memorable or fantastic, whatever you want to call it, directorial debuts.
Woo!
So, let's call upon me, because I feel like it.
Aren't you special?
I am so damn special. I'm going to go first. And I'm going to talk about a movie that I absolutely love, was completely obsessed with when it came out. It was my number one movie of that year. And I am talking about the directorial debut of Duncan Jones with the movie Moon. And he actually means the moon, not somebody mooning, just to clarify.
Not a porno.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, Duncan Jones, since this movie, has had an interesting... No, slew of movies that he's directed, with most recently being the Warcraft movie, which I wasn't the biggest fan of, and neither was Bede, since he did his bad movie tweet-a-thon.
I wasn't the biggest fan either. I mean, it I don't know, it was fun, but they built it up to be a lot more than it delivered.
That movie needed to just be about the orcs, because that was the best part of the movie.
Agreed. Yeah, I wish they had stuck with them and
the human stuff out. Was just, oh my god, what the hell? How come the people playing people can't act, yet the people in the like mocap and shit can act?
Well, they even managed to make Ben Foster boring, and I don't know how that's possible.
Ben Foster seemed like he just came out of a completely different movie. Like
he probably went from Hell or High Water to that. You know, it's like,
yeah, just watch Hell or High Water to get your Ben Foster goodness fix.
Yep.
Anyway,
but anyways, what makes Moon a great directorial debut for Duncan?
Because it is a fucking amazing movie. It just takes one actor, one location, and it makes it just so interesting. And this just. You sort of don't really quite understand, like, he's on a base on the moon, he's by himself, but then, like, a double of him shows up. And you just got no idea, but as things unravel, then you start to understand what is going on, and it's just the way it unravels, and the way that Sam Rockwell, through this entire movie, just keeps your attention. And it's just, there's a lot of interesting detail, and it does feel like you're on this moon base with this dude. It's just, I mean, it's been a while since I've seen it, but it just blew me away when I saw it. Just, you know, you just think, like, how can this be someone's first movie? And then when you find out, shit, this dude is David Bowie's son. Like, talent runs in that family, man. Really does.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was my top movie of that year. Just freaking amazing.
I do think, and I do agree, from a standpoint of science fiction originality, I mean, it's not, you know, the most original of anything, but I think that whole movie came down completely to Sam Rockwell.
Yeah.
And he was absolutely fantastic for an actor to carry an entire movie like that.
Yeah.
It is such a difficult task. And I think a lot of people undermine, you know, the amount of effort that takes and the amount of direction it takes, you know, to make sure, cause that is a pretty, in the hands of another director, that could have been an insanely boring movie.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, it's not boring. It's so interesting.
It's not. No, it's not one bit at all, and that's what I love so much about it. Yeah, and then you've got Kevin Spacey, you know, like, it just those little elements, the beautiful cinematography and everything. Now, I agree, for a first-time director, you know, and, I mean, his dad was no movie director, but, I mean, his dad knew the business, but Duncan clearly has an eye for this kind of thing. Mm.
He completely just knocked it out of the park.
Oh, yeah.
Just completely. Yeah. It's if people haven't seen it, just bloody watch it. It's such a great movie.
I'm actually looking forward even more to his next movie, Mute. It's like a sci-fi thriller kind of thing. It kind of looks like, from what I've seen, and sounds like a bit of a Blade Runner-esque kind of story.
Okay.
Looks pretty cool, actually.
That's coming out on Netflix, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. Shit, what isn't coming out on Netflix now?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Bede, do you have any thoughts on Moon?
Yeah, I didn't love Moon as much as you guys, but really like it. But I did like it, and I thought it was a really strong debut for Duncan Jones, like you said, I mean, it's a very difficult movie to pull off doing like a single character in a single location type of film with some really interesting and ambitious themes and ideas that I wanted to explore. And I thought he did a really good job of handling all that. And I'm definitely interested to see. I mean, and I think so far his career has done pretty well. He did well with Source Code, which I really liked. And yeah, he kind of stumbled a bit with Warcraft. But, you know, I'm definitely always very interested to see what he has up next in his sleeve. And I'm definitely looking forward to his next film, Mute, for sure.
Mm. So, yeah. Nick, we'll go to you.
Well, me?
Yes, you. Me?
It could have
been. Sizzle the bacon.
Sizzle, sizzle, sizzle. Oh.
Sizzle, sizzle. Okay, well, I'm going to go to, funny enough, some of these I'm sure that we pick are going to be the progeny of another very famous person, but I'm going to have to continue that one for a minute after Duncan, and I'm going to have to go with, excuse the fire truck in the distance, I'm going to have to go with Jason Reitman. And his directorial debut, Thank You for Smoking.
See, I almost had this as a pick, but I thought one of you guys might have picked it, and I was correct.
That's now, I know pick. he's done a lot of documentary shorts, obviously, but Thank You for Smoking was his first big theatrical debut, mm-hmm. and it was the first movie I saw from him. And I honestly think that Thank You for Smoking is one of the most underrated... It's not even a... I don't even know the best way to describe it because it's actually more brilliant than people think it is because it's so hard to make a film that about a subject matter, a controversial subject matter, and be able to be so informative and yet stay so neutral throughout the entire story. And for those of you who don't know, Thank You for Smoking is about a PR guy for the tobacco companies, played by Aaron Eckhart. And his job is to go out there and basically tell everybody that, you know, the smoking is fine and you should smoke up as much as you can, and plays the politics on both sides. And it's just absolutely fantastic. The way Jason progresses the character... that sometimes you love him, then you hate him, you love him, yeah. you hate him. And in the end, you know, the movie never takes a side, because what the movie's really about is it's not about whether or not you should smoke or not. It's about the freedom of having a choice.
Yeah.
And that's what I absolutely loved about this movie. It never shoved the politics down your throat. All it did was it showed you two equally hilarious sides of the conversation, and you just kind of made your own decision about it. And the editing of this film, the narration, Aaron Eckhart was fantastic. William H. Macy, and like, what an all-star cast for a first timer. And most people would say, oh, you know, you're always the son of Ivan Reitman. Of course, you know, he's going to get that. Nah. As far as I'm concerned, and no offense to Ivan, I love Ghostbusters, and he's a good director, but I think Jason surpassed him in terms of overall storytelling, and I think Thank You for Smoking, because of that, is one of the best directorial debuts ever done.
Yeah, I actually think Thank You for Smoking is one of the most important movies of the last few years, because as you said, it just takes this interesting approach with this controversial subject matter, but the way the movie just unravels, it's bloody fascinating. It really is.
It's also a completely intelligent film as well. Like you guys says, it takes a very even-handed approach to the subject of smoking. And I do agree, Nick. Like, I mean, I love Ivan Reitman. I think he's a really good director. But Jason Reitman definitely is his own. Like, he could have easily have gone in the same direction as, you know, his dad's work. But he definitely has a lot more interesting things to say with his work. And I mean, everything after Thank You for Smoking, I've been really good, like Juno, Up in the Air, and Young Adult. I really like those. But Thank You for Smoking definitely was a great indicator. Like, you know, okay, he may be the son of Ivan Ivan Reitman, but he's definitely his own person as a filmmaker.
Yeah,
there's no ego to him. There's nothing. You can tell Ivan, he definitely raised him right in, you know, that realm of Hollywood and everything like that. He earned where he was. And the thing, you know, I remember he was on Howard Stern years ago and they said, you know, holy shit, they were throwing Justice League at me and all that. It's like, I wasn't interested. Mm. It just wasn't my thing. Whereas some, you know, directors are, oh my God, yeah, thank you, please, give me that. No, I had different stories to tell, and I, and they may not be as popular or make as much money as those other films, but that's what he stuck with, and that's what he's done ever since.
Mm. Definitely. Cool. Bead.
Back to you then. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Bead. I mean, we can forget about Bead, that's God. Fine.
Alrighty. Well, I'm going to talk about one of my all-time favorite directorial debuts, and it's a film that I absolutely love.
And I love Harry's Medea. Right,
sorry?
The first Medea.
Yeah, it's Medea's family reunion.
It's sad that you know which is the first one, my God.
Good God.
But my favorite one, and it's from a director who kind of has a reputation now as being a love-him or hate-him kind of guy, and that, of course, is Kevin Smith's directorial debut, Clerks, which, for me, the film is still one of my all-time favorite comedies, and I think what I love about it so much is that when I was sort of growing up as a teenager, when I watched it the first time, I could relate to everything that was going on in that movie, not just like from, you know, the pop culture references and all that to like the characters talking about Star Wars and all that, but mainly just where they were at that point in their lives. And I think everyone, especially at that age, could relate to on some level. And every time I watch it, I'm like thinking, oh, geez, like, I'm still thinking about all this stuff, like what they're thinking as well. And the fact that he sort of shot it very micro budget, basically shot it at the place where he was actually working at the time. And like, it's just a really funny, really hilarious film that has some great characters, some hilarious dialogue. And like, I know his career for a lot of people has kind of been mixed ever since, but you can definitely tell, like, but for me, Clerks is one of those films that kind of really represents what the 90s was and where we, and what a, you know, a lot of people of Generation X were thinking at that time. Mm-hmm. But to me, I think it was just a really strong debut. I mean, okay, sort of everyone can have their say about Kevin Smith as a director, but as a writer, man, like, he just, that film is just so brilliantly well written. Mm-hmm. And to like it, and it pretty much, you know, made him the cult figure as he is today. So, yeah, that's it, definitely one of my all-time favorite directorial debuts, for sure.
I think you nailed it on the head.
Yeah, Kevin, thing is, like, I don't know. He's kind of all over the place, you know, nowadays. And I get it. He's got nothing really to prove. And, you know, he's had a few, I don't even get his last one, Yoga Hosers, but Jesus Christ. I know you like to do something fun with your kids, but, you know, you don't have to release it to the public. But, holy Christ. But anyway, I mean, I still love the guy, you know, love him or hate him. But, I mean, between Clerks 2, which I loved. I know everybody doesn't love it as much, but...
it's got your lady in it, so of course you loved it.
Well, yeah, I know. Rosario. And between Dogma and Jay and Silent Bob. My mom loves Jay and Silent Bob. You know, like, so there's a lot to be said, but the guy has had a hell of a career. I mean, even though he's had some, you know, bumpy spots along the road, he's still very well respected and comes off as a cool guy. I mean, shit, I've been in his presence as well, and he is a very nice guy. But Clerks is just, it really is timeless in a sense. The jokes are hilarious. The acting is great, especially by guys who barely acted a day in their lives. The writing was great, but it was also, it was another story of incredible sacrifice for incredible success. I mean, he had to sell off so much in order to get it funded, and, you know, it's like Robert Rodriguez with his as well. And Clerks is timeless, and it will remain timeless no matter what.
Not much to add, really. You guys have said it all, so.
But what's your sec- What's your second pick, Marcy?
I've decided to go with something that could, I mean, at least a director who's got a movie out at the moment, but his first movie is a little one called Shallow Grave, and I'm talking about Danny Boyle.
Ooh, that's a good choice. That's a great choice.
Very good.
I remember when I first saw this movie, would have been early teens or so, and it just blew me away. I was like, holy shit, this is some good stuff. And the film had stars Ewan McGregor. Why do I always forget his name?
Christopher Eccleston? That's,
Christopher Eccleston?
Yeah, Eccleston.
God, yeah, I said Eccleston. It wrong. And the girl was Kerry Fox. Yeah, I mean, this is just, you know, it's mainly got these three people. They share a flat. I think their other flatmate winds up dead, and then they discover a lot of money, and then it just progresses to this damn money that they all seem to want. And it just, it takes these interesting, like, twists and turns, things that you wouldn't expect coming, and then the ending, like, the final frames are just like, holy shitballs. Yeah, but it's just such a clever, it's a really clever movie. His direction is just bar none, just perfect. And just the way it unravels and, I just want to, like, rave about it because it's just so interesting. And, I mean, this was a first for the screenwriter, and I do believe it was Ewan McGregor's first, like, starring role as well. I think is just really interesting, like, the characters, like, you don't like these fuckers, but you're just so interested in this story. What the fuck is going to happen? It's just so clever. It's just, yeah, I mean, it's such a unique and interesting movie. I haven't seen it for quite a while, but it's one I really want to revisit.
Oh, yeah. Danny Boyle is... my level of excitement for Trainspotting 2 is off the map.
Yeah, like, really excited. I can't wait till
we're a little over a week away. Like, it's like, go see Logan or go see Trainspotting 2. I'm actually balancing the two. But it is a fantastic movie. I haven't seen it in many years, but it did recently actually replay back in theaters here film festival, and I did want to see it. I didn't get a chance, but Danny Boyle's got a style that you could literally throw on a new movie of his now, and probably within the first 10 minutes, you go, "That's Danny Boyle. I know that's Danny Boyle," because he's just got a way of telling stories.
Everything he does is just so different, which I think just makes him such an interesting guy.
Well, he's been a ballsy guy from the beginning.
Yeah,
so, you know,
this is a ballsy damn movie.
That's the thing. He makes very ballsy films, like, but ballsy in a sense of dramatic and, like, gut wrenching. You know, not gory, not violent. Well, I mean, yeah, they are pretty violent, but just stuff that rips your heart out. You know, and he's definitely one of the best talents that. Was then and is now, so.
Bede? Any comments?
Yeah, I mean, it's, Shallow Grave is just a really strong debut for him as well. And, like, he's had a very interesting career, Danny Boyle. He, like, he's very diverse in, like, the types of films. I mean, this is a guy who, after this film, would make films like Trainspotting, of course, but also 28 Days Later, Slumdog Millionaire, Steve Jobs, 127 Hours. And you can see that confidence in his work in Shallow Graves, and you can definitely tell, like, while watching that film, that this is a director to watch, and that he was going to go on to do so many big things. And, yeah, and he definitely proved that. I mean, the guy is definitely one of my favorite filmmakers, and I'm always looking forward to whatever film he brings out.
Yeah, what I think is great, when you watch this, you wouldn't have a clue it was someone's first big film.
Oh, no.
It's not apparent at all, which I think just adds to it so much. Yeah, so Nick, back to you.
Back to me, eh?
Eh.
Well, I'm guessing that one or both of you may have already picked this particular one. We didn't share our lists before the podcast started, but I think I have to mention one of the greatest directorial debuts of all time, Mr. Quentin Tarantino's Reservoir Dogs.
Ooh.
Was definitely on my list because that is my second favorite movie of all time, but I will let take the reins.
Okay, if you don't mind, Mar, I'm sorry. I didn't want to steal that away from anybody.
No,
but,
go right ahead.
Now, I know most people will say, it was my best friend's birthday from 1987. Okay.
Yeah, well, technically it wasn't finished. Yeah, technically that wasn't finished, so...
Yes, it wasn't finished, and it wasn't near the sophistication, and it wasn't a proper, you know, studio film. So... Reservoir Dogs, man, what more do you say about a film that is so beloved? I mean, to this day, I mean, the fact that when you hear, Reservoir Dogs is coming to theater, oh my God, I can't wait to go see that. Yeah, it's Quentin has reached a status of filmmaker that I don't think any other filmmaker has actually ever achieved before. He is like this, him and David Fincher, I'd say, are probably the closest when it comes to this category of filmmaker, that when he's announcing, he's like, I compare him to like Willy Wonka, where if Willy Wonka's going to be making an appearance or coming out with a new kind of chocolate, the whole world goes insane with anticipation. and that's Quentin Tarantino in films. Like, every time a film is announced from him, everybody's like, will it be his last? You know, is it going to be as good as everything else? Is it this? Is it that? And one of the reasons is because he hasn't made a ton of films, right? I mean, he's made more than anybody could possibly ever hope, dream of making, but he takes his time with his stories and he makes sure they're all done right. And, I mean, Hateful Eight was fantastic, but, I mean, Reservoir Dogs... is cinema at its finest. I mean, in terms of, like, even for people who don't like that kind of movie, they sit down and watch it and think, holy shit, the acting is incredible, the editing is incredible, it's, you know, told out of order, and which was very avant-garde for the time. Pulp Fiction obviously took that much further, but Reservoir Dogs just transcends. I mean, it had an all-star cast of actors.
What makes it interesting is about a diamond heist, and we never see the diamond heist.
We never see the diamond heist. Now, of course, some studio a few years ago had to make the stupid fucking idea of making a video game to fill in those gaps. I don't know what the fuck did that. But yeah, you're right. It's about a diamond heist that we never see. We only see the aftermath, but through the acting and script, we're able to tell that it was probably one of the worst freaking diamond heists of all time.
Yep.
Like, one that probably the freaking presidents put out an order for their heads, but, yeah, I mean, Harvey Keitel, one of the greatest roles ever. Mike Madsen, it was the role that solidified him in film, like, cinema nerds forever. Like, he will always be Mr. White for the rest of his life and beyond. And, you know, Tim Roth, Steve Buscemi, so many actors getting their start. And, you know, it's, yeah. There's so much one could say about it. You could talk for hours about it, but that's why he's pretty high on my list.
It's amazing. I love it. And I think you meant Michael Madsen as Mr. Blonde, not Mr. White.
Oh, sorry, Mr. White. God, what am I doing?
And why does Steve Buscemi have to be Mr. Pink? It sounds like Mr. Pussy. Mr. Brown. Mr. Brown sounds like Mr. Shit. Just quote that movie.
I highly recommend anybody who's never if you've got the Blu-ray and you've never bothered to watch the special features, watch the interviews. They're so fucking funny.
They're so
open about how annoying other actors were, and all. It's fucking hilarious. One of the greatest ever.
Oh, it's just one of the best movies ever made. I could just sit and talk about it all day, but I won't because we don't have the time.
Yeah. All I can say about it is you've made a great, truly amazing directorial debut where every other filmmaker after they saw it wanted to try to emulate it. I mean, do their own take on it, like which happened to a lot of films after Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction came out because there was a lot of the sort of Tarantino knockoffs and all that.
Mm. Yep.
That's just amazing. I love it so much.
Mm.
Yeah. Bead. Back to you.
Yes. Alrighty. My next all-time favorite directorial debut is a film from two filmmakers who happen to be siblings, and that, of course, is the Wachowskis' directorial debut, Bound.
Yeah, boy.
Why is that Bead?
Bead just loves the lesbian action.
Well, I mean, it's very good lesbian action, but, you know, that's
damn straight it is.
But it's kind of funny now, because I actually didn't see this film until, like, after all their other films. Like, you know, after all their big-budget sci-fi films and all that. So it's kind of weird watching Bound before, like, you wouldn't think after watching this movie that they would go on to make films like The Matrix or Speed Racer or Cloud Atlas, like... To me, what I love about Bound, like, again, it's different from, you know, I mean, besides being their directorial debut, it's just a fucking great sort of noir tale. And it kind of, again, it's sort of, but at the same time, it sort of breaks a couple of the rules and that makes it stand out amongst that genre. Like, for example, it's about sort of this love story between these two women, one who's like just got out of jail and she's just working at this building, and she just happens to fall in love with the local gangster's girlfriend. And from there, it just follows their relationship, which, let's just face it, is probably some of the most steamiest, like, sex scenes that you'll ever see.
But you know what makes it work so well is because they have this incredible steamy chemistry together.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, you
couldn't have two other actresses. It had to be them.
Well, they've admitted for years that they were basically like they said. Who did they compare? No, they said to. I think they said to Jennifer Tilly, it's like, you know, compare like Gina to like other men. And she's like, oh, yeah, Gina. It's like, well, they clearly had a chemistry.
Yeah, I mean, the chemistry in this movie is so friggin' thick that not even a knife could cut through it. That's how thick it is. Like that, and to me, that is one of the main aspects of what the film is. So, why the film is so brilliant is not just is because of their chemistry with each other, and of course, you know, it's brilliantly well written, has some great twists and turns here and there, and you're just trying to figure out exactly where this story is going to go. And I have to give props to Joe Pantoliano, who's just also equally great in the film as well. Like
who they would use in The Matrix.
Exactly, and it's just a fantastic debut, and yeah, it kind of just stuns me. It's like you watch this like after, like I said before, like you watch it after seeing all the other films that the Wachowskis have made. You're thinking, you know, I'd like to see them actually go back to making something like that. You know, something that small scale. I mean, not to say I don't love their other films, but I mean, it's just something kind of small, kind of just character driven and. Plot driven, and yeah, Bound's just a perfect debut. Like, I have no complaints about it at all.
Yeah, no, it's one of my favorites.
I could even argue it might even be their best film, like, or even at least be on line with The Matrix as their best film. I keep going back.
Excuse me, Jupiter Ascending, hello?
Oh, yes, of course. Greatest movie of all.
I do think they should go back to basics like they did with Bound, because they are extremely talented, and this movie really shows that.
Oh, yeah.
And I might add, nice little role from Chris Maloney.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
back to me. Yeah, I've got, I mean, I wrote down like quite a few, so I am just going to go ahead and say David Lynch with Eraserhead.
Ooh.
Now, as everybody knows, David Lynch is my all-time favorite director, and this was his first movie, and Eraserhead is so polarizing. It is not, let's face it, it is not an easy movie to watch. It feels like it goes for 5 hours. But the what he just creates, this really strange world, the way it's all put together, you know, what is it truly meant to be about? Is it one man's madness into becoming a parent? You know, there's these amazing visuals. It's got the weirdest scenes. You're just so like, what the hell? Eraserhead is a waking nightmare, but it's just a phenomenal film. And it really showed just what we would get from him with his future films. And, you know, in the 70s, like, he did this in black and white. It took like 4 years to make. He still will never reveal how they made the weird baby thing, because the baby thing is just a baby thing.
Baby from Eraserhead.
It's the strangest movie, but wow, like, to make this on your first go, it's like, whoa, what the hell?
Yeah, exactly.
You can tell this dude is freaking, like, so out there that you just want to be his best friend.
Yeah.
I would totally be BFFs with David Lynch. We could just sit around, we could just chain smoke cigarettes and, you know, be amazing.
I have a confession to make.
You've never seen this movie.
I've never seen Twin Peaks. Oh. I have no idea what it's about. I've never seen it. Everyone goes insane over it. I guess I gotta watch it.
Yes, you do.
I have no idea. Huh?
Yes, you do. You need to watch Twin Peaks. It's amazing.
Seriously, just never got around to it. So, yeah. Anyway, that's my confession for the day. Makes me a terrible Canadian.
Exactly.
If that's possible.
No, I haven't seen Twin Peaks either, but now with the new season coming
up. What the hell? Both of you watch Twin Peaks, for fuck's sake.
Before you watch Twin Peaks, remember that Fargo Season 3 is coming out in April. That takes priority, people.
That is true.
That is priority.
I haven't watched Fargo yet, anyway. So there's my confession. I've seen the pilot episode, which I thought was fantastic. I just didn't get around to watching the rest of it.
Fantastical.
Anyway, yeah.
All right.
Anyone have anything else to add to Eraserhead?
It's
fucked up.
It's pretty messed up, but yeah, it's pretty enthralling as a film. Like, when I watched it the first time, I was definitely entranced by everything that was going on. So, yeah. Definitely fucked up from it.
Yeah. Nick, you're number three.
This is where it gets tough, because there's a lot left to go, but I'm gonna go with one, a little unconventional here, from one of my all-time favorite directors, one that I always look forward to when he's making a new film, and that is Michael Mann's Thief.
Ooh, that's a great choice. That's
haven't seen
choice.
It.
I fucking love this movie. Recently, Criterion, actually, in the last year or so, they re-released Thief remastered on Blu-ray. It actually brings me to tears almost every time I think of it. It's so beautiful. God, I love that. And Thief is basically, it's the story of Jimmy Kahn, who basically plays a professional safecracker, and him and his partner, Jim Belushi, you can almost say that Thief was the original Heat. And Heat is almost a remake, in a sense, but so with a few different elements, obviously. But Thief was, from a technical standpoint, I mean, and from a storytelling standpoint, I mean, it had some of the best actors of the time. I mean, you had Robert Prosky, you had Willie fucking Nelson as his, you know, oldest friend who was, he was so good in it. Dennis Farina, rest in peace, miss him. Oh, miss you, Dennis. And just, I mean, Tuesday Weld, it was absolutely fantastic. And it's all about the life of this professional safecracker and him, you know, he's getting older and he's got to get out of the life. You know, he wants to be happy, he wants to get married, he wants to have kids. But that world just keeps pulling him back in no matter, you know, he's got to make enough money to get out. But in order to make that money, he's got to dig himself deeper again. And this was Michael Mann's official feature film debut. And then he went on to make, oh my God, countless classics, Manhunter and The Keep and Heat and all the rest. But Thief, I would actually have to say, is slowly becoming my favorite film of his, and it was his first. And it was beautifully shot. The music by the German electronic group Tangerine Dream, shout out there for Chris Bumbray, who's a huge fan as well. And absolutely, it's just a breathtaking film. If you get a chance to see it, if you love a fantastic crime thriller, you can't do better than this. You've either got Heat or you've got Thief, both directed by the same guy, both different in their own way. Just absolutely fantastic.
I need to watch it.
One of my all-time favorites.
I have never seen it.
Never seen it? I highly recommend it.
I will add it to the list.
Highly, highly, highly.
Adding it to the
list.
Even if you're not really into that kind of genre, I would still recommend it. But if you loved Heat, oh my God, you'll be all over this movie.
I think I'll enjoy it, that's for sure.
Yeah. Plus, Jimmy Caan is like the biggest badass ever.
Oh, yeah.
And it's actually one of the few films I remember. He doesn't usually watch his films, and he's not typically proud of his films, but it was this film and The Godfather that he was truly the most proud of. And that says a lot about a guy who's pretty hard on himself in his films. So it is a fantastic movie.
Bede, your thoughts on this one and then your next one?
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen Thief, but it's definitely one that I really enjoyed a lot. And I definitely have the Blu-ray of it as well. I definitely need to check it out again. But yeah, I agree. It's a really strong debut, and I was really impressed by it. And again, like all the hallmarks you would see in Michael Mann's career are in that film. And I agree, James Caan was terrific. It's just a really strong debut, and if people haven't seen it, it's definitely worth checking out for sure. Now, for my third pick, I'm going to be picking a directorial debut that is an important one in a lot of ways, because it not only was important for the genre that the film was in, but it actually created an entire subgenre overnight after when it came out. And that, of course, is George A. Romero's Night of the Living Dead.
Excellent.
Which pretty much was the film that pretty much created the zombie genre. I mean, zombies were around at that point, but they were more in the tradition of kind of like the voodoo.
They weren't, they weren't
zombies.
Yeah, they weren't mainstream yet.
Yeah, it was more the voodoo type. Especially if you see something like, I think it was 1931's, like White Zombie. It's the kind of voodoo thing.
Yeah, like this one though, because he created them in a way that were like that, but these ones were hungry for flesh. And you
don't really know why the dead have come back to life either.
Yeah.
That's it. They come back to life, they want to eat brains. That's it.
Exactly. Like the little hints here and there how they came back. But to me, he created this full, he didn't even call them zombies when he wrote the film. He just called them ghouls. It wasn't until after the film came out people started calling them zombies, and you know, and that's kind of been stuck ever since. And now, 50 years later, that the influence of this film is still being felt. Like, I mean, the zombie genre is kind of just a little overdone at the moment. But I mean, if it wasn't for Night of the Living Dead, there wouldn't there wouldn't be a resurgence of zombies in our popular culture. But as a film on its own, it's just an incredibly scary, incredibly intense film. And also, since it was such a low-budget film, it has a rawness to it as well. And also, it's very politically charged as well. And also, it broke new ground in a lot of ways, because the main lead of the film was an African-American man.
Mm.
And who, up to that point, unless you were like Sidney Poitier, like African-American actors, especially male ones, weren't really the leads in films, particularly in horror films. And Dwayne Jones, who played the lead, was just great. And he gave such a commanding presence and such a leader that you just find him so riveting every time on screen. But everyone's really good in the film. But yeah, it's just a really intense, just groundbreaking film that still haunts you to this day. Because that final scene, is just gut wrenching, and it just sticks with you long after when you've seen the film.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Exactly.
So classic. it's definitely I do love that film. Now, of course, it's not my favorite Romero, because for me there is no other zombie film but Dawn of the Dead.
Yep.
Despite the fact that Night of the Living was first, Dawn was the one that was like, fuck, this is the future.
Yep.
This genre will be around for a very long time, and hopefully not in the form of a shitty Resident Evil movie. But
that's a whole different story.
They need to reboot that shit and reboot it hard. Night of the Living Dead is absolutely classic in every sense of the word, and he is the architect of that genre, of that particular style of horror. And Danny Boyle took it to another level. So many directors have come along and tried to add their own little spice to it over time, but in the end, when you break it down to its original parts, it's all Romero. So yeah, it's classic in that sense in every way.
Mm. Yeah, I can't really add much because I think you said it all. They're coming for you, Barbara. There's one of them over there.
There's one over there now. You know what's funny, though? Like, since this movie is in the public domain because of a mix-up, and we could easily make our own version of this movie if we wanted to and not get sued.
Oh, easily.
All right, let's do that.
But it would never be as good as this one, that's for sure.
Just to point out, the remake by Tom Savini is actually really damn good as well.
Did he remake it?
Mm-hmm. 1990, I think. Well, 1993, sorry. Am I getting it right or wrong?
I think it was 1990 or 91, I think.
It was very, very early 90s.
That makes sense.
It's a different beast, but it's still really, really good.
And it has Tony Todd, so you can't complain.
Yeah, exactly. My final pick. I'm going to go with something a little bit different. A different kind of director from a European country. And I am going with Alejandro Amenábar's Thesis from 1996. It is a horror mystery thriller. So this one is interesting. It is about a college student, Angela, who's doing her thesis on violence. Violence in movies as well. And her and a fellow student, I believe, who's played by Feli Martinez, and Angela's played by Anna Torrent. I can't say these names. They actually do find a snuff movie, and they discover that the girl in the snuff film was a former student at the school. And upon that investigating and everything, they come across another student played by the absolutely beautiful Eduardo Noriega. So yeah, like all this kind of, like with the snuff film, all the stuff about violence, it's, I mean, it feels like it's just so relevant now. And I think Amenabar was definitely, trying to convey, I think, issues he found within, you know, the Spanish film industry, and that, you know, like people wanting, the violence in their movies and, you know, but it's such an interesting movie. It's such a great, like, mystery thriller. I was blown away when I saw it. And again, it's one of those movies you cannot believe. This was his first bloody movie. And I do believe he came up with the story and screenplay as well. And of course he, Amenabar would go on to, direct a lot of, kind of well-known movies like, Open Your Eyes, The Others, and I think his most recent movie was Regression, which has Ethan Hawke, which I haven't seen. But he's...
I heard that was okay.
Yeah, he's an interesting director, but this debut, I think, just... You wouldn't know it's from a first-time, like, director for a feature. But everything about it is just so spot-on. The acting is great. The way it unravels and then the way... the twists and turns are revealed. I mean, they happen at the right time, like the times they should in the movie. And he gets really great performances out of, like, the three main actors. It's just so bloody interesting. It's just, I haven't seen it for a little while, but it was just, like, wow.
It's where, bloody good.
Yeah, I was like, where the fuck has this movie been all my life? And,
yeah.
Of course, his two actors in it, Eduardo and Fele, would go on to be in Abre los Ojos, Open Your Eyes.
Nice.
So, yeah, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but highly, highly recommend tracking it down. Well nice. Worth the 2 hours.
I'd say so. Like, I saw it a while ago, but I did definitely really enjoyed it as well. Like, it's a pretty solid sort of horror thriller.
Mm.
Yeah, I haven't seen it myself, so I'll have to add that to the list.
You have to add it to the list. It's damn interesting.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was my final pick. Yeah, after this we can just give some honourable mentions. But you guys do your final picks first.
Yep.
Okie dokie. Okay. The final was a tough one because I can think of at least three or four more that I could also talk about. But I got to give a shout out to a director who I seriously, I don't know why he's not doing more work. His talent needs to be continually thrust upon the world. I am going to go with director Jonathan Glazer and his directorial debut, Sexy Beast.
Ooh, nice.
From 2000. Now, most people probably don't know Jonathan, although they might know his last feature film, which was Under the Skin, the insanely underrated and spine-tingling sci-fi thriller with Scarlett Johansson. But coming from basically, you know, when it came to his directing, he basically just done... like Fincher, a lot of music videos starting out, and Sexy Beast was his big directorial debut. And for those who haven't seen it, all-star cast, Ray Winstone, Ben Kingsley, Ian McShane, huge names for the time and even now. And basically takes you into the world of a retired British criminal, Ray Winstone, who was basically trying to get away from the life in retirement and, you know, living the life in a Spanish villa with his wife and you know, just trying to find peace with himself. Again, kind of like Thief, in a sense. I'm noticing a pattern here with directorial debuts. But Sexy Beast, for me, is one of my all-time favorite crime thrillers of all time. But
it's not even really
a crime thriller. It's more of it's basically, for me, it's the ultimate story of your past coming to haunt you, and the decisions that you make in life coming back to haunt you. No matter how much you try to wipe the slate clean, it doesn't matter. It follows you. Mm. And what follows in this film is Ben Kingsley as the legendary Don Logan.
He is amazing. I mean, the reason I ended up seeing this movie, like, it was, I think it was just coming out on video, and I just saw, like, a few minute scene of him on the plane at the beginning.
Yeah.
That sold me. I'm like, I have to fucking watch this movie.
He is. Fucking and, no like, regrets, he was, and, like, for those who know, he was nominated for an Oscar. He didn't win that year, but because most people up to that point were like, wow, Ben Kingsley, isn't that the scrawny guy from Schindler's List and Gandhi? And to see him take on this incredibly intimidating role. And, like, when it comes to, like, British gangsters, he's up there. He's for me, he's damn near number one when it comes to film. And he's just such an intimidating force. I mean, the fact that he makes, like, Ray Winstone is a pretty tough and, you know, big guy. The way he just nibbles, like, Ray Winstone down to a wisp of a man every time he's on screen. The fact that he makes Ray look emasculated is incredible. But it has an incredible script. The music is absolutely fantastic. And it's basically, it is. It's just a tragic tale of your past coming to haunt you and the way you deal with things and the way you don't deal with things. And it's also, for me, I know a lot of people, you know, they know Ian McShane from Deadwood and a lot of but this was actually the first film I ever saw with Ian McShane, and he's horrifying in this movie. It's actually one of the creepiest roles I've ever seen a man play. Teddy Bass is his name in the film. And again, he makes Ray Winstone piss in his pants throughout the entire movie. It's basically about it's a bunch of really freaky English guys. And it's mind-blowing. It is insanely quotable. Yeah. The profanity is off the map. But it's
just like
so
my
funny.
Life every day.
Exactly, all of us. They say the smartest people are the ones who curse the most.
I'm the smartest, after all.
I know, I freaking joined Mensa. But,
you funny fucker.
Yeah. Funny fucker. But, No. Sexy. Actually, my buddy Fraser, he introduced it to me many, many years ago, I think back in high school. And I've been wishing that Jonathan Glazer would really take the Fincher route and really be pushing, but I don't know what he's doing next. And, you know, Under the Skin is getting in, you know. Under the Skin is, like, spine-tingling. It's actually hard to get through that movie. But he is such an incredible talent, and Sexy Beast was a great start for him.
It's one of those movies, like, you're like, how the fuck can this be someone's, like, directorial debut?
Yeah, it's got a lot of style to it, and sometimes a couple of moments where it's like,
you can tell because he did music videos.
He did, absolutely. Mm. He's very visual, and but man, has he got a knack for handling actors and doing scripts, but...
Yeah.
So cool. So cool.
Bede, your final
yes.
one.
My final one, and I think I have saved the best for last, and it's a film that not only is it one of the greatest directorial debuts of all time, it's a directorial of a film that is considered by many to be the greatest film of all time, and that, of course, is Orson Welles' directorial debut, Citizen Kane.
Yeah, it's a great...
Bede went right back in time for that one.
Exactly. Yep. I actually only saw it for the... It only just finally came out here in Australia last week, so I was able to see it. But, you know, that's a whole different different story there. But I haven't rewatched it as of late, but when I watched it the first time, like a couple of years ago, I was just completely stunned, like, how accomplished of a film it was. And the fact that it was Orson Welles' directorial debut.
At, like, 26,
phenomenal.
I believe.
Yeah, he was only 25 when he made this film. And the fact, but also it's just groundbreaking in a lot of ways. Some of the sort of stylistic techniques and filmmaking techniques that he did in that film were like the first time that they were ever done in any film up to that point. And all of his influence in terms of how he directed the film and also from writing it is still being felt today in cinema. And it's just a great, interesting film about sort of the rise and fall of this one guy, Charles Foster Kane. And it's just, and the fact that besides co-writing, directing, and starring in it, he just excels at all of it. Like, you think for somebody who's 25 years old, that would be daunting for anyone.
But
like,
the thing
to take
is,
on three of those.
Doing this movie, the studio bloody hated it. He had to fight hard for his vision to get made.
And of course,
well, most
people,
I was just going to make it really quick. Just, you know, what does a 25-year-old know about the world, right?
Yeah.
That's the other thing. Like, that's why is I always find, exactly, the age is profound. So,
I mean, I know Orson Welles up to that point mainly just worked in theater because that's where, you know, he made his career up to that point, was directing plays and starring in them and whatnot. But, yeah, this was like he wanted to make a film. And like Marcy said, like, I know there's a great – I know there's a documentary out there that actually covers the making of this film. I can't remember what it's called, The Battle for Citizen Kane, which I hear is amazing. And, of course, it talks about, like, the struggles Orson Welles had trying to make this film. But even, like, at the time, though, like, when the film came out, yeah, it went on to win, like, an Oscar for screenplay, but it was kind
it
of
was,
had mixed reception.
It was a
from
flop,
critics.
Really.
It was, it was a flop, and one of the big, William Randolph Hearst, the guy who ran one of the big newspapers at the time, he felt that the film was about him, and so he tried to bury the film and didn't want anyone to cover the film at all, and you think the film would have been forgotten, but nah, the film is, like, now is just considered, like, for a lot of people, the greatest film ever made. I mean, maybe not for me personally or even for us, but if you go by general consensus, that especially when they do their, the American Film Institute, when they do their top 100 films of all time every couple years or so, Citizen Kane is always number one. So, and there's a good reason for that. And I always keep wondering whether Orson Welles knew that he made a film that became just a groundbreaking landmark in cinema.
What, you mean Transformers, the animated movie?
Of course. I mean, you know, that would be second to Citizen Kane. But
of course.
Yeah, I mean, but when I think of great directorial debuts, like Citizen Kane is the first one I think of. And I think everyone thinks of this one first when they think of great directorial debuts.
Yeah, I would say, like, I mean, I do like the film. I do enjoy it. I think it is a great movie. Would it be in my top 20 of all time? No, not even close. But the reason for that is because it didn't have a lot of influence on me growing up. You know, for me, it's all about what moved me, what inspired me. And, you know, if you were to say, Nick, compared to Indiana Jones, where does Citizen Kane rate? It's like, well, it's not even on my radar. But that being said, as a piece of cinema, it was ahead of the game. Yeah. Like Kubrick and, you know, all the rest. But it is profound. It is an unbelievable piece of storytelling for its time. And it is, in a sense, timeless in a lot of it. Like Kubrick, he inspired, and that's where it becomes so important and so profound that, you know, if he could pull that off, especially at that age, I mean, we all know Spielberg, he did, you know, Jaws in his 20s, but it is an incredible film, and it was an incredible achievement, and it'll always be seen as one of the best films ever made, no matter what.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, so we can run through some honorable mentions.
Too many.
My first is Glenn or Glenda by Ed Wood. That movie is a masterpiece on so many levels.
Yes.
Of awfulness. Sorry, I had to just go there. Some honorable mentions. I'll go with Dario Argento's first solo directorial movie, which was The Bird with the Crystal Plumage, which is, it's a phenomenal movie and just a fantastic Italian giallo. And the first time I saw it, I was just blown away. Just thought it was amazing. One of my favorite movies growing up, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids by Joe Johnson. And
that's a great one.
You see that, and then you see his other movies. You can just see this guy just has this larger-than-life vision. He was a great choice for that movie, and he made it work so well.
They don't make kids' movies like that anymore.
No, they don't. They really don't. They really don't. And he's done some really interesting movies since. I mean, he did a great job with Captain America.
Oh, my God. When they announced him, when he was going to... I mean, any kid, any 80s or 90s kid who grew up watching The Rocketeer knew that the moment they announced him for Captain America, it was a done deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I've also gone with more of a smaller movie from a smaller director, Colin and Tate from Eric Red. Again, when I first saw this movie, it just freaking blew me away. I'm like, how the fuck is this someone's first directorial, you know, movie? It's such a great thriller. So worth watching. The dude is so talented. Just phenomenal. And I will go ahead and say The Virgin Suicides from Sofia Coppola. A film I just was obsessed with when it came out. I read the book, and you compare the book to the movie, there are changes, but she just really captured that essence and the strangeness and the mystery. And you could see that while maybe she can't perform on camera, she can do magic on the other side. So I think it's a polarizing debut. And my last honorable mention, which I think everyone should see coming, is Saw from James Wan. Everyone knows I'm obsessed with Saw. I love those movies, but the first one is just amazing. And James Wan has become the freaking just tops right now. So, yeah, they're my honorable mentions.
Okie dokie. Okay, well, here are mine then. Too many to go off, but of course, when it comes to zombie films, I'm amazed actually nobody said this one. But of course, Edgar Wright, Shaun of the Dead. His big film debut, which realistically changed the way I look at comedy and what makes me laugh. So I gotta give him credit for that one. And Hot Fuzz is celebrating its 10th anniversary.
I love Hot Fuzz so much.
One of the greatest ever. But yeah, Shaun of the Dead was 2004, his first feature film. Then, of course, there is Guillermo del Toro's Kronos.
Yeah,
amazing.
Which is absolutely fantastic. One of, I mean, he is a master of horror. Crimson Peak was, you know, just a taste of what his original feature films were like. But that's another one. Also, quick, I have to say, Steve McQueen's Hunger.
I was going to mention this one as well.
What an incredible
directing. It's such a bloody hard movie to get through. It really is.
It's a very hard film to get through. Basically about for those who haven't seen it, it's a famous, an IRA hunger strike. One of Michael Fassbender's first big performances, and Steve McQueen has gone on to direct other incredible films since, but what a hell of a debut. And finally, a very underrated director, but somebody who's finally starting to come into the light a lot more. Funny enough, his name came up recently. He directed reshoots for Star Wars Rogue One. Is Tony Gilroy's Michael Clayton.
I actually haven't seen that, but it's always kind of been one I've wanted to see.
You should, Mark. It is absolutely fantastic. It's actually my favorite. It might be my favorite George Clooney movie ever. And Tom Wilkinson is equally as fantastic. Tilda Swinton won the Oscar for that film, and there's a reason she won it. Mm. I remember a lot of people were pissed off that she won in that, and I'm like, dude, you have not seen the movie then. I can't understand that if you argue that point. But he has shown himself to be an incredible directing talent, and I hope we see a lot more of him in the future. Yeah, other than that, though, I mean, there's a lot more, but off the beat.
Yeah.
All righty, I'll go through mine very quickly. I'm just going to say that right down, after Orson Welles, the greatest directorial debut of all time is Tommy Wiseau with The Room. I'm just putting it out there right now. Greatest directorial debut ever.
Oh, hi, Danny.
Oh, hi. But, how's your sex life, huh?
The Disaster Artist, it's coming.
Yes. Yay! Can't wait for that one. But realistically, though...
That was you being realistic.
That was me
being realistic. That's just like me being realistic about Glenn or Glenda.
Exactly.
From Edward D. Wood Jr.
Yep. But, some of my favourite directorial debuts of all time. Of course, I'm surprised nobody else mentioned this one, and I did think about putting this on my top four. It was Tobe Hooper with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I thought you guys might have had it, so I didn't put it on my list, but I do absolutely love this movie.
Not a fan, but hey, if everybody else likes it.
It took me a few viewings to love that movie.
I like the remake better. It did shoot me. I don't know. It just... I'm not shooting down your choice at all, Bede.
I think I
saw the movie. Wait, oh my god! Oh, how can I forget? Was Halloween John Carpenter's first film?
No, that was Dark Star.
It was Dark Star. Yeah,
that's right. Okay, sorry. Anyway, I went off on a tangent there, but
that's all
right. Yeah, I think I saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre too late in my life to really appreciate it. But other than that, though, from anyway, you explain, me. You're better than me.
It's one of the greatest horror movies of all time, depending on who you are, of course. And and it's just a great debut from him. Next up, of course, is Charles Laughton's Night of the Hunter, which is his first and only film that he directed. If you haven't seen it, it's definitely worth checking out. It's just probably one of the most visually stunning films ever made, because he used a lot of sort of German expressive. Got my tongue tied now. sort of used German
expressionist.
yes. What Marty said as an this film, and it's just an amazing film. Next up, of course, is the Coen Brothers' Blood Simple, which in a lot of ways is kind of similar to. It's sort of a modern noir, and it's just superbly well done, brilliantly well written, and very direct, and has a lot of sort of very dark humor in it as well. Next up, of course, is John Singleton's Boys in the Hood. Like, his career is kind of over the place at the moment, but man, his directorial debut, Boys in the Hood,
That's a great movie.
And he made that when he was 22 years old, and he's still the youngest director to ever be nominated for a Best Director Oscar for that film. Next up, of course, is another director whose career has kind of been all over the place after his first film was Richard Kelly's Donnie Darko, which pretty much became an instant cult hit when it came out, and it's still being felt to this day. Next up is another director whose career has gone all over the place since his first film, and that's Terrence Malick's Badlands, which is an amazing film that I highly recommend everyone to check out. Next up is Robert Redford's Ordinary People. Like, I know some people were pissed off that he won the Best Director Oscar over Martin Scorsese's work on Raging Bull, and I can understand that, but as a film on its own, his work in Ordinary People is fantastic, and it should be seen by everyone. And of course, finally, Sam Mendes's directorial debut, American Beauty.
I was going to have that on mine, but I figured someone might have had that listed as
well. He won the Best Director Oscar for first time out for his work, and after this, he went on to have a has had pretty strong career as a filmmaker as well. So, yeah, those are all my picks.
I just want to shout in Last House on the Left by Wes Craven because I do fucking love that movie. It's not the greatest movie ever made, but my God, was he angry.
Oh, yeah.
He was just like, fuck it, I'm making this fucking movie.
That movie. Yes. But is it as angry as Tommy Wiseau's The Room? That's what I want to find out. You're tearing me apart, Lisa.
My God.
Anyway.
I cannot wait for Disaster Artist.
Oh, it's going to be the best movie ever made. Ever. Cool. So that's a wrap on our show. Yeah, interesting choices. There's so many more we could have talked about, but we only have so much time. So thank me for hosting. Thank you, Bede, for coming on and co-hosting. And thank you, Nick, for being our guest.
Pleasure.
And now we will let everybody know where they can find us. And because I tend to forget these things, I need to just remind myself. Of course, you can find us at supermarcy.com. You can look up the Super Podcast or Super Marcy on iTunes and download the show. You can email us at thesupernetworksm@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thesupernetwork. You can follow us on Twitter at @SM_supernetwork. You can follow me on Twitter at supermarcy.com. You can also check out Daily DDT, where I am one of the contributors on the site for wrestling articles. And yeah, Bede, what about you?
Well, you can find me dressing up in a wig and a dress and acting like Madea on a daily basis, because, you know, that's just how I roll.
I'll stay right away from that.
No, you won't, girl. But anyways, you can also find my weekly writings at supermarcy.com. I've got quite a few stuff on there at the moment. I've recently posted up my predictions for the 2007 Oscars, and as well as my review for the Will Smith disaster, Collateral Beauty, which was a fun review to write. And also I got a couple of new stuff coming up soon, a couple of audio reviews coming up, video reviews. And, of course, I'll finally unveil my top 10 best and worst films of 2016.
And we should add, we are working on a spin-off podcast.
Yes.
And
you
can reveal just the name of the spin-off podcast.
Okay, we'll reveal just the name, and it's a baby of mine I've been wanting to do for a while. It's going to be called the Super Cage Rage Podcast.
Nice.
I think if anyone gets what the title means, you should be excited what the podcast will be about.
Indeed.
But, cage rage. You cage rage.
But anyways, but also you can...
Cage!
Anyways, you can also find me at my Twitter page at twitter.com/BeeJamine, or my Facebook page at facebook.com/BeeJamine, or my fan page at facebook.com/TerribleAussie.
And Nick, where can people find you?
People can't find me. Bruce Wayne lives in Batman's attic. But, Jesus God, that movie was amazing. I've been so busy lately. Things have been absolutely nuts. I do have to apologize to those fans out there who have been looking forward to my Final Cut 2016. I am still working on it. I know it's very late in the game, but, you know, life just got absolutely insane in the last few months. I think I'll be kicking things off, and things are still crazy over with the Jolo movie network, and things are big and expanding and doing great. And should hopefully see some more of my editing projects in the near future.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Thanks again. And thanks for listening, everyone.
Thank you.
And yeah, until next time, I've been Super, Bede's been terrible, and Nick has been Canadian Bacon.
Very Canadian.
Catch you later, guys.
See you, everyone. Later.